This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll get a preview of Social Enterprise Week coming up in October and hear about the impact of social enterprises in Cincinnati. First up, in her book, The Third Law, Tamara Ryan looks at the challenges chronically unemployed and impoverished women must overcome to create new lives for themselves. She also argues for a more compassionate approach to recovering addicts, convicted felons, and victims of social abuse. She's the CEO of the Women's Beam Project, a social enterprise that offers transitional jobs to women others might consider unemployable. In that role, she's seen just how effective this approach can be. She recently spoke with me about the value of social enterprises and her work at the Women's Bean Project. Tamara, welcome, and thank you for joining me today.
It's nice to be here.
Tell us about the Women's Bean Project. What's the mission?
Well, we employ women who've been chronically unemployed and impoverished in our manufacturing business, and we teach them the skills that they need to get and keep mainstream employment.
So what kind of skills are you talking about, Tamara? What kinds of things do they need to learn?
Well, they need to learn basic life skills like problem solving and goal setting, budgeting, planning and organizing. And they also focus on learning job readiness skills like coming to work every day and on time, taking direction, paying attention to detail. And those are skills, obviously, that will make them a better employee, but we think also a better mom and a better community member. And then during their time with us, they also get their basic needs met. So we make sure that they have stable housing and transportation, child care, health care, kinds of things that will ultimately keep someone from being able to go to work, but are really not necessarily directly related to job skills.
So, and you're starting to touch on this, how important are those basic needs?
Well, they're essential. If someone doesn't have a place to go home every night, you can't expect them to come to work every day. So ultimately, a job is the key to stability, but having a place to go home and making sure that your health care needs are taken care of and making sure that your child has a safe place to go every day while you're at work, those are all very essential and are really ultimately huge barriers to keeping employment if you don't have them.
So, Tamara, the Women's Bean Project is involved in manufacturing. What kind of products are being manufactured?
We have a line of gourmet food products that started with bean soup, thus the name. We have about 35 different dry food mixes that range from that bean soup to brownie mix and cookie mixes and cornbread and different spices. And then we also make a line of handmade jewelry. And our products are distributed all across the country. We're in about 1,000 stores across the country in 40 states and also with a number of online retailers.
Now, how did you become involved with the Women's Bean Project?
Well, my involvement began as a volunteer. I was working in marketing and business development in the private sector, and I was looking for a way to connect to the community. And I loved the business model of Women's Bean Project. I loved the fact that there was a business, and the better the business did, the more women could be served, the more the mission could be advanced. So I began to volunteer on the Sales and Marketing Committee, and I did that for about 6 months. Then the position of CEO came open, and I thought that I had a great idea about who should have that job, and that was a friend of mine. So I tried to talk her into applying for the job, and according to her, I went on and on about what a great place it was until finally she said, if you think it's so great, why don't you do it? And that was 13 years ago.
Now, prior to joining the project and getting involved with this project, what was your attitude toward people who were considered to be unemployable because they had a criminal record or some other issue in the past?
Well, I thought that felons were bad people who made even worse decisions, and I frankly didn't understand the power of addiction and how hard it can be to stay clean and sober, and I thought people who were on welfare didn't want to change their lives. And so even though I believed that they deserved an opportunity for a second chance, I think I wasn't very forgiving of their behaviors. And what I've learned in the time that I've been at Women's Bean Project is that it's never as simple as the label that we tend to place on people. There really is often much more to the story, and really when you get down to it, the women we serve at Women's Bean Project are not so different from me, but for the accident of birth or perhaps one or two choices made at key decision points, perhaps we could have ended up in the same place.
In fact, you have a chapter in your book, The Third Law, that touches on that. There but for the grace of God go I is the expression, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly that. And I think that was one of the... I've learned a lot of things since I've been at Women's Beam Project, but one of the most important things I learned is that it's never as simple as the label that we place on people, that there is always more to the story, and it's not... There is no situation that is black and white, and that often people are making choices that are the best of a set of bad choices, rather than there are great choices and they choose the bad one. And I think that that realization has really helped me become more sympathetic, certainly, and much more able to help advance both the mission of this organization as well as the business.
How many women have gone through the Women's Beam Project?
Well, we were founded in 1989, so in the early days, the records weren't kept electronically, and the women did not necessarily stay for a finite amount of time. But we estimate it's about 950 women have gone through our program. Started with two women, and today, in a year, we'll employ about 80. And the women only work for us for 6 to 9 months. The idea is that we are a transitional employer. So they come here with a history of chronic unemployment. A typical woman we hire hasn't had a job longer than a year in her lifetime, though the average age is about 38. And they come and work for us and learn all the skills that they need, not just to get a job, but to keep it. And then they transition out into the community into what we call a career entry-level job.
So what kind of support and follow-up do the women receive after they've gone through the program?
Every woman who goes through our program is assigned a mentor, a one-on-one relationship with a volunteer from the community who meets with her during the program once a week for an hour. And that mentor relationship then continues after they graduate and move into their jobs in the community. Then, as an organization, we also follow up with graduates for pretty intensively for the first 90 days after they leave us. And then after that, we incentivize the women to check in with us every 6 months after they graduate. And we pay them $50 every 6 months to check in. And that gives us the opportunity to both celebrate their successes and invite them back to talk to current program participants, but also to help them get access to resources. So if a graduate needs housing resources or needs to come in and use our computers to apply for jobs, after she has left our program, she can always do that.
Now, how effective has the program been, Tamara? Are you able to help everybody who comes through?
Unfortunately, historically, we've turned away about 4 out of 5 qualified applicants. That's largely because in our organization, sales create jobs. So sales are the driver to our ability to deliver on our mission. And unlike many nonprofit organizations, what you hear when you come to our organization is that we are a sales-driven organization, because ultimately that's the driver. We are focused right now on growing our sales across the country so that we can hire every woman who needs us. And then the second part of that will be that we want to ensure that when we do hire a woman, our services are so effective and far-reaching that she is the last in her family to need us. I truly believe that when you change a mother's life, you change the family's life. We want to make sure that the ripple effect extends beyond each woman we serve into her family and her friends and hopefully the community as a whole.
Now, is there an economic return to society by businesses like the Women's Beam Project? In other words, how do they enrich society?
Mathematica published a job study last year in 2015, and they found that for every dollar a social enterprise like Women's Beam Project spends, the return on investment to society is $2.23, which includes $1.31 in decreased use of benefits. So a woman graduates our program and moves on to a job where she's obviously going to become a taxpayer, and also she's going to need fewer of the services that she had used in the past. she may still have to have subsidized housing for a period of time, and she may need other support, but she's going to use fewer of those services. And ultimately, the goal would be that she moves so far up the path of self-sufficiency that she is not needing any sort of support. But this is definitely a huge stepping stone for her into mainstream employment.
And Tamara, I'd have to think, too, for women who have served time in prison, that this a program like this helps reduce the recidivism rate, and that's another benefit to society.
Absolutely. The number one indicator of rearrest is being unemployed in the year prior to the arrest. So we follow up with our graduates every 6 months, and we know that at 1 year, 100% of our women are still employed. That's been the case for the last 3 years. So that means that no one who has come through our program goes back to prison.
I'm talking to Tamara Ryan. She's the CEO of the Women's Bean Project, and she's the author of the book, The Third Law. And in your book, Tamara, you write about the Women's Bean Project, the women who've been in the program, the challenges they faced. Tell me about the title, though. Why The Third Law?
The third law refers to Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I chose that title for a couple of reasons, but the primary one was that I had observed over and over again that even as the women who came to Women's Bean Project worked to change their lives by doing, frankly, everything society was asking of them, they were keeping employment, they were staying out of prison, they were staying clean and sober, there were still so many things that pushed back on that change and made it challenging, if not nearly impossible, to keep changing their lives. And those forces are varied. It includes societal attitudes around felons and former addicts. It includes people in their lives, perhaps a significant other who has recently gotten out of prison, or who feels threatened by the changes the woman is trying to make. And frankly, often it is even the woman herself who is very afraid of the idea of having success. If you've never succeeded in your life, if failure is the only thing you know, success can be very scary. So I thought that it was an apt title. Another reason I chose the title was because I came to this place, Women's Bean Project, thinking that it was about other people changing, and I changed in the process, and I learned that it's not possible to watch transformation without being transformed.
Tamara, how strong is that bias you were talking about against felons and people who suffer from addiction?
I have observed it's extremely strong. I think that and the best way to see that is that once you are a felon, once you are labeled a felon, you are a felon for the rest of your life. And it happens in terms of job applications when you have to check a box that says whether or not you have a felony. It potentially gives an employer the excuse to not look at anything else about your qualifications, but merely disqualify you because of that one checked box. And I think that is one of the primary ways that felons are adversely affected, even after they've served their time, even after they've supposedly moved on with their life. That's something that will follow them forever.
Of all the women that the Women's Bean Project has employed, how have they turned out as employees? In other words, when they're working for you, do they have a good track record? Are you pleased with the work that you're getting from them?
The women who stay with our organization and graduate our program, which is about 70% of the women we hire, end up being fantastic employees. And I'm fortunate because I get to see them from the first day they walk in the door, and maybe they won't look me in the eye or they come across as angry or defensive, and I get to see them from that moment to the day that they graduate and they've finally been hired by somebody who will value them, who will pay them benefits, and will give them opportunities for advancement. And frankly, I think that one of their biggest barriers is that they don't believe that they're worthy of that until it actually happens. We focus on making these women great employees, and that happens during the period that they're working for us. They're going to come to work every day and on time. They're going to take direction. They're going to be leaders. And then they become all of those things, and then we let them go and let them go and be great employees for someone else. It's a horrible way to run a business, I'll tell you.
But how much of a sense of satisfaction do you get out of this?
It is so uplifting to watch someone transform and to become what I think often is the woman she was meant to be and had never really had an opportunity for someone to look past her past. One woman said to me once, "This coming to Women's Beam Project is the first time someone has actually been more concerned with my future than my past." And one of the things we say that we work hard to create is a safe and accepting work environment. So it's still going to be a work environment. There are still going to be requirements that we make. There will be a lot of coaching that happens along the way, but ultimately we are going to teach the women how to work and how to conduct themselves in a mainstream employment environment by actually doing those things. And so we have to do a great job of creating a work environment here so that they can be prepared for the next place.
I thought one of the chapters in the book had a very interesting title where you talked about why employment is the solution. And is employment the big key? Is it the top factor in rehabilitation?
I suppose my bias is that it is. And the reason I believe that it is so important is because I watch what happens as a result of the dignity of work. There's not dignity in welfare and being fully supported by society. But knowing that when you serve dinner or when you buy shoes for your child or you are able to go to the grocery store and buy what you need, and knowing that that money came from your effort is so fulfilling and is so such an important part of the work that we do, that I think that employment truly is the first step to all the other things that can happen subsequently. And it, in my mind, it really comes down to this idea of dignity, that when you have a job and you go to a place that where you feel valued and where you feel that there's an opportunity for advancement, and where that paycheck then helps you support yourself and your family, there is dignity in that that you can't find through other supports.
Another chapter in your book, you write about how the criminal justice system works against rehabilitation. So what needs to change in the system so it's not a hindrance to rehabilitation?
Things that has needed to change and is beginning to change is drug sentencing laws. We, as a society, really have criminalized addiction through our drug sentencing laws. And as a result, we are warehousing people and putting them away if we use those dollars instead for rehabilitation from addiction, we would be much more effective in the use of those dollars. Today, our prisons are so overcrowded that we're not able to provide treatment that ultimately will lead to an addict's success. And you combine that with the fact that that felons are discriminated against once they're out in terms of being able to get employment. It makes it almost impossible to break out of a cycle. So I think we need to change both our societal attitudes around addicts and felons and recognize that addiction needs treatment rather than warehousing. And we also need to be more open to hiring someone who has a background. And we need to invest our dollars rather than in prisons into rehabilitation.
So what else needs to be done to support marginalized people? What other things can individuals in the community do?
I think we should all recognize that we can contribute by giving someone an opportunity. One person giving one person an opportunity is a great place to start. It doesn't necessarily need to be so overwhelming that you change the entire criminal justice system. It really starts with one person being open to the idea of giving another person a chance. And that can be done by hiring someone who needs a second chance. It can be done by volunteering at a shelter or at an organization that does this kind of work. I think that there are so many things we as individuals can do to help others, and we all see things that we don't like. I think that not very many of us do something about it, because sometimes the challenges, the idea of poverty down the street from us, can be very overwhelming. And I think that if we approach it from the standpoint of the one little thing that we can do, and if each of us do a little thing, it will add up. None of us need to approach a social problem and think we have to solve the whole thing.
Tamara, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Tamara Ryan, CEO of the Women's Bean Project and author of the book, The Third Law. Tamara will be one of the keynote speakers at the Social Enterprise Cincy Summit taking place October 3rd at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. You can find a link to more information about that at WVXU.org. And coming up, we'll talk about the impact of social enterprises in Cincinnati and get a preview of Social Enterprise Week. Thanks to Kristen Gundrum for listening to 91.7 WVXU today.